Booze Dancing Entertainment Network is live on a Whiskey Wednesday, and we're back together again with a special guest who's been here before. We are welcoming back Dean Kaplan, the Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Catoctin Creek Distillery in Virginia. Dean, welcome back. How are we doing tonight?
Doing great. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Boys, how are we tonight?
All good. Ready to drink? Ready to talk movies?
How's life treating you?
Like a baby treats a diaper.
Oh, messy, I'd say.
That's one of my favorite Norm Petersons. Life treating you like a baby treats a diaper.
That's right.
There you go. There you go. Well, Dean, we have you back for a second grand appearance, and you have helped select.
Wait, you want to run the intro real quick?
Run the intro. Yeah, run the intro. Sorry.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
We're officially back. We're officially live on Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. This is What We Watch When We Drink. And it'll be turned into a podcast at a future date. But tonight, we are live on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, our website, boozedancing.com, and wherever else you get your live stream stuff, I guess. There you go. Okay. Dean Kaplan is with us from Catoctin Creek. And Dean helped pick out the watch part of our evening tonight. And he also sent along a brand new whiskey from Catoctin Creek. So why don't we start there? How does that sound, guys? And then we'll go and get into our movie for the night. So Dean, tell us about what you sent us.
What I sent you guys is batch one of our first new everyday item in over 7 years. This is the first, you know, we've done some LTOs and some fun collaboration things here and there, but this is our, and I don't know if it'll show up on the screen with the background here, but this is our hot honey rye is what this is. And so this is an 80 proof, 100% rye whiskey that's been infused with local honey. It's a tri-honey blend of buckwheat, wildflower and clover honey, and habanero chili flakes. And it's something incredible.
Head is spinning.
Yeah, right? So it was born out of a barrel select that we did in 2022. So one of the things that, you know, we do for some fun things is, you know, age in special barrels and finish off in that. And there's a local honey farmer who does a spicy honey in Richmond. And so he aged his honey in one of our barrels and then gave it back to us. And so Becky Harris, our president and chief distiller, said, let's toss some whiskey in here and see what happens. And the result was amazing. We proofed that one at 82 and it sold out in like 3 days. So we got to the beginning of this year and sort of were thinking about, you know, what do we want to do? What's going to be interesting for this year? We've got a lot of moving parts, a lot of stuff going on, and hot honey kept coming up. We'd go to shows like the one you and I met at, Aaron, and people would say, hey, I got a chance to try that hot honey. That was amazing. Are you ever going to do it again? But it's not replicable in that hot honey barrel, right? Because sometimes you'd get them and there'd be no honey in there, or there'd be a ton of crystallized honey. Then we have to heat it up. So Becky, who's a chemical engineer by trade, started experimenting, which is one of her favorite things to do, and found a way to infuse that honey into the whiskey. So instead of aging in that barrel, what we do is we take a large drum of this local honey. And the honey actually comes from within 10 miles of our distillery in Personville. So a really local source for us. And then we infuse the chili pepper flakes. We heat it up with a drum heater, essentially like a giant blanket that heats up the honey. And we stir in the hot honey, or stir in the honey pepper, the pepper flakes. And then when it gets the heat that we're looking for, right? The Scoville heat that we're looking for. We then infuse it into the whiskey and we let it sit for a few days. And then Becky's found a way to keep it so that the viscosity of the honey integrates with the whiskey. so you don't get separation, right? You get a little bit because natural separation is going to happen no matter what, but that honey stays integrated in there. We filter it just to get the particulates out. We don't chill filter anything that we do. So just enough to get the particulates out. And then we bottle it at 80 proof. And it is fun, guys. This is, please take a sample of this. I don't have much to share. So I've been really conservative sharing it with all my buddies, but it's been a hit with everybody I've been able to taste it with.
Well, thank you. And before we jump in, let's do a little toast, a little clink, clink. Thank you again, Dean. That was horrible. Clink.
Cheers, boys.
I have many questions. I'm sure the boys do too. Is this the standard rye, the standard flagship rye?
Yeah, it's the same 100% unmalted mash bill that we always use, right? It's no different there.
It's got a little heat.
You're feeling that heat there, right?
A little bit, just enough, just to make it fun. Just a little tingle.
Exactly. As I said off air, right? I'm on the road 50 weeks a year. I'm in every, we're in 28 states. I cover all of them, right? And I'm selling whiskey. And very often, the guys that are the gatekeepers to the accounts, the buyers, are serious whiskey guys, right? They're guys who want to have, you know, 130 proof hazmat bourbons that are 15 years old. And I show up with, you know, this honey flavored rye whiskey. And they go, I love your core stuff, but I'm not interested in flavored whiskeys, right? And I say, guys, listen. It's not going to poison you. Will you just humor me, right? Will you please just, it won't make you sick. It won't do anything. Will you just give it a try? And the reaction is what I'm seeing on your faces right now. Oh, that's not what I was expecting. And I love it. I'd love to hear what you guys think and answer any question you have.
I'm not sure what I was expecting. What do you think, Ange?
The mouthfeel is actually kind of nice. It's almost like really silky. You know, you've had some flavored whiskeys and they're like syrupy. This isn't quite at the syrupy phase. It's not oily. It's just kind of silky, you know, if that makes any kind of sense at all.
Nope. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
Doesn't make a lot of sense?
Yes.
Yes.
No, it does. You're making sense here. So for me, that's coming from that honey, right? I think, you know, the buckwheat honey is really what I'm getting more than even the wildflower and the clover, right? You get that earthiness. And I love that. The expectation is that it's that sort of cloyingly sweet or syrupy is what everybody's expecting. That's what your mind sort of says when you bring it up, and it's not. And then, you know, for the heat for me and most people I talk to, you get it at the end, right? It shows up just at the back of the end of your palate. And I find that it's integrated really well with the alcohol and the rye spice. It sort of amplifies what you're expecting out of the rye anyways. And so while it's only 80 proof, the experience is feels a little bit hotter, but without it being astringently hot. But I love it. I'm super happy with this.
For me, it's all like mid palate, you know, right in the middle of my tongue, just kind of tingling right there, you know, and you get a little bit of the honey, you know, you get that because honey's like a different kind of sweetness. It's not like sugar, you know, it's sweet, but it's not like super sweet. I don't get as much of the rye. I mean, it's there, but the heat and the honey kind of taken over a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. It rounds out the rye.
Yeah, it's good. That's really, really good. That's fun.
So the peppers themselves, you said it's just the peppers are infused into the honey.
Yes.
Are the peppers anything special? Are they local? Are they right off the shelf somewhere?
Nah, just habanero chili pepper flakes.
Okay, got it. I can't even imagine the experimentation that has to go on with Becky to get the level of heat that's not annoying, subtle enough that's still palatable, right? And still got some flavor to it. And same with the honey too, because you don't want it to be that syrupy thing, but you don't want it to be so subtle you can't taste it.
And that's the magic of Becky. I mean, she's an engineer, so process is amazing. You know, Scott, her husband, who's our general manager, he's sort of the canary in the coal mine, as it is, if it's a little too spicy, right? She'll let him taste the honey as they're adding in that spice. And if he says, oh, nope, that one, we'll keep tweaking that ratio there. So, you know, it's a team effort for us.
So if I didn't know that this had pepper in it or chili in it, I would just think that it's a higher ABV whiskey. It tastes more than 40% without knowing. Mm-hmm. By the way, the bottle that you sent, the sample, it must have spilled a little bit in the box. The label got a little messed up, and it's it was handwritten, right? It says hot honey, rye whiskey infused with honey, and it looks like olives. And when I, instead of chilies, that's interesting. Olives and honey. What is that going to taste like?
That would be horrible.
It probably would be horrible. Well, don't give Becky any ideas.
Briny and sweet.
Yeah, 2024 release right there. We got it.
That's the Guar release.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And I am not a hot sauce, spicy person. I don't get spicy in that way. I get it like it's just a higher ABV, which is good for me.
No, and we love that, right? And very often when I'm tasting people on it, so I just did, Scott and I did a show in Boston. We did Whiskeys of the World in Boston on Saturday. And, you know, people were coming by and tasting the whiskeys. And very often, like, I don't like spice, right? I don't like, just like you're saying, Aaron, like, I'm not somebody who loves spice. And I say, listen, it's neither as sweet nor as spicy as you expect it's going to be hearing hot honey rye. Give it a try, right? And so it, you know, I think I had one person of the 300 or 400 people that gave it a try that said, oh, that's too spicy for me. But, you know, that's going to happen.
It's not out yet, right? It's coming out.
It's slowly trickling out to market. So our official, you know, global launch of it is on October 1st. That's when it's going to be, you know, available in Virginia and other markets. But in a handful of markets out in California, it's hit. It should be heading out to stores in California right now. In Maryland, D.C., Delaware, I know it's in stores. Texas is on its way. So slowly making its way out there. And then October 1st is our actual official kickoff of it.
Have you tried it in a cocktail yet?
There's a lot of really good opportunities to use it, right? So the most simple way is in an old fashioned, right? The heat and the sweet together, right? You're amplifying that spice of the honey and maybe even deciding to swap the sugar for honey, right? But then you're a little bit more in a Gold Rush territory, which is going to be sort of our flagship cocktail. And then one thing that we found is incredibly good is a spicy riff on a Manhattan. So a Manhattan is what we're going to call it.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of puns, but you know, my team is.
That's a good one.
How about a sour with this?
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like a sour or maybe like a whiskey smash with the mint.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've yet to really find a traditional whiskey cocktail that it doesn't provide a really fun, enjoyable riff on, right? One of the fun things that we've got going on right now is we're actually just about to complete our Mixologist of the Year competition. So we have 6 mixologists from across the country coming to the distillery in 3 weeks. And I'm going to have them play around with this to come up with what they think the best riff is going to be. And so that'll be some really good applications there to, you know, use the brain trust. My skill set's more in retail than bars. So I turn to the experts for that kind of stuff.
I think this would definitely have possibilities in a lot of cocktails. It's like sweet and sour, right? You can put it in a lot of sweet and sour sauces. Right? That's all it is.
That's why I was thinking like a whiskey smash or a sour or something like that.
Yeah. It's really shockingly good. I was not excited about this. When I told Leanne, I said, no, this is just flavored whiskey is not my thing, and neither is spicy. And boom, you got me. You got me.
It's good. It's fun.
So let's move on to our first little bit of conversation about our movie that we chose. And I'm not sure actually how this one got picked. Angie, did you pick this?
I think I just picked it because I've been wanting to watch it again. And I just thought, you know, remember what you were saying? You thought this could be like a problem, this whiskey? So we were flirting with disaster.
We were, yes. We were flirting with disaster. And that's what we have, the 1996 black comedy from David O. Russell, starring Ben Stiller and Patricia Arquette. I don't know about you guys. You obviously have seen it before. I knew nothing about it except, actually, I thought it was a different movie when I started watching it. Wait, is that this? I thought this was something else. So I was surprised by this movie in many ways. Mike, had you seen it before?
If I did, it was a long time ago.
And Dean, you had seen it before.
No, this is the first time I've seen it. No.
But you just had to spend $12 to rent it three times, right?
If I had spent an extra buck, I could have owned it. But
oh, you're gonna own it? That's
right. Yeah.
So, Ange, why don't you give us a little plot summary of this one?
All right. So the plot summary, again, it's all cut and paste from everywhere. So adopted as a child, new father Mel Culpin, played by Ben Stiller, decides he cannot name his son until he knows his birth parents and determines to make a cross-country quest to find them, accompanied by his wife Nancy, played by Patricia Arquette, and an inept yet gorgeous adoption agent, Tina, played by Tia Leone. He departs on an epic road trip that quickly devolves into a farce of mistaken identities, wrong turns, and overzealous and love-struck ATF agents, played by Josh Brolin and Richard Jenkins.
So before we get to the cast, which we could talk about the cast for a long time, let's talk about the story. What did you guys think about this crazy madcap story?
Well, clearly I like it.
Clearly you like it. Clearly. Gentlemen, besides Angelo.
No, I liked it. It stressed me out. Let me tell you. It just stressed me. For some reason, the way that see a little myself in Mel, which is interesting, right? And so, and just the stress that he's going through, I could feel it, right? And that part of the reason why it took me three times to watch it is I'd start watching this. I don't have the energy to do this right now. I'm going to get back to this later. Then I'd, had to come back to it. But no, I like the story. Interestingly, they showed my hometown. I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan. And so they were heading to Battle Creek, they went right past that. So, it was cool to see that. And but no, it was good. And I loved how it all tied up at the end.
Mike, what do you think?
I thought the character portrayals of his parents would be enough to make you want to go and find who your real parents were. Those two. Mary Tyler Moore and George Segal do a tremendous job of being really, really crazy parents.
I would argue that they were the stars of this movie. Yeah. For me, they were. And I had just recently watched the Mary Tyler Moore documentary on, I want to say, Max. And it was really good. And it's interesting because her real life, she had amazing stardom, right? And leading to lots of problems in her life, including not always being a great parent, not being a parent that's always there.
Yeah.
And here you have this character that she's playing who's, she's in her own little world and not always there and doesn't really know what's going on completely. I thought she was just great. And I love George Segal in pretty much anything. He's just great. The story is interesting because it takes so many left turns.
Yeah.
It is not a straight line anywhere.
But it never drags.
No, turns. It can't, there's like 15 stories here, individual little stories that, depending on the location, it's not a linear story at all. Well, there's a big picture, of course, but it is crazy in that way. I don't know. Who wrote this thing?
David O. Russell.
He wrote it?
Yeah.
Wow. He's got a knack, like you were saying, Dean, about making you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You've seen Silver Linings Playbook?
Mm-hmm.
That movie, the first 20 minutes, I was like, I got to leave. I eventually got into it, but the first 20 minutes of that, when they're all just going bananas and, Robert De Niro's just all on edge and everybody, that's how I felt with that movie. But then eventually, I got into it and it was really, really good. But yeah, I see what you mean. I take your point on the David O. Russell bit. He has a knack for it.
Yeah.
And if you've seen all his movies, they've got this like edge to them. They're very just frenetic. Would that be the word, I guess?
And there's an edge and there's a lot of things that leave you a little incomplete at times. It leaves you on the edge, leaves you on what's happening next.
Yeah,
and it's done intentionally so that you are kind of uncomfortable after every scene or every act. And you just kind of get dragged along in this series of these not unfinished, but left you hanging moments, and you don't really know what to do with them, I think, in a lot of, throughout the whole movie, for me at least. How did this movie do at the box office?
I think it was a really small independent movie.
It doubled its cost.
Yeah, so apparently it cost $7 million to make,
and
it made about 15.
This feels like a movie from that era that would have went to DVD really quick. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that's right. It was not a blockbuster. And it's going to go to DVD. And we'll be renting it at Blockbuster.
If I did see it in the theater, I think it was in the theater I mentioned before, like the Ritz Theaters, which are kind of small
art house.
They do a lot of independent films and all that kind of stuff. So
the places where you see Patricia Arquette movies.
Yeah. I mean, I thought she was great. She was really good.
She's great. She was great. And it's so funny seeing her. Now she's everywhere. Boy, she's a knockout then, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was cute.
And yet they dress her down to the point she's, not the knockout in it.
One of the uncomfortable parts to the whole movie for me is...
One of?
There's
a lot of them.
Well, one ongoing thread is the way the baby is cared for.
Yeah.
Or lack of cared for.
The baby has no name.
The baby has no name.
Ethan.
And the baby's just around. And oh yeah, we got to put this baby in a car and drive really fast. Or the opening scene where the baby's in bed with mom and dad, which is uncomfortable. that poor kid. That won't be a therapy appointment.
That kid looked familiar. Like if you look at The Untouchables, the scene with the baby carriage and the steps. Now it just popped into my head. I think the baby has the same face. Obviously, it can't be the same kid because it's 7 years apart.
No, it's one kid does it all.
AI. It's
AI. It was the early AI. We'll start with babies.
It's a very small adult that plays babies and everything.
It's Mickey Rooney.
It's like Finsta.
It's Mickey Rooney.
From the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah, that was the ongoing uncomfortable thing for me was the poor kid. Any other thoughts?
I mean, the cast on this thing is just really a ridiculously good cast.
Yeah.
It's just nonstop.
It is nonstop. I mean,
and the budget's only $7 million. So did they just do this for free?
Pretty much.
Oh, and also it's 30 years ago. You didn't pay him as much.
No, but you know what's interesting too? It's only David Russell's second movie.
Right.
Yeah.
He's nobody. So they're doing this because of why? Because they all just want to act. They want to, keep their faces and going. 96 Tia Leone's pretty hot at that time, right? She's got some. She's big on TV with she's married to Duchovny at that time, probably.
I don't know. I don't think so. Not yet.
Not even yet. Mary Tyler Moore is, post. She's in that weird part of her career where she's gone to movies. Siegel's at the end of his career. Josh Brolin's just beginning his career.
Right.
Ben Stiller's kind of just beginning his career. I don't know where's this in Ben Stiller's timeline?
Yeah, I'm not sure. When was Something About Mary? Was that a little later? Was that before? I think that was later.
I think that was 99, wasn't it?
That sounds about right. Okay. Yeah, 99 was a good movie year.
Alan Alda's probably the biggest name in this thing.
That's true.
And it's even, what, 10 years after MASH or so?
Oh, it's more than 10 years after MASH.
15 years after MASH?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ended in 80 probably. So, right. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Why would they do this movie? It's just that they love the script so bad that I have to make this movie.
Maybe it's hey, he's the next hot young director.
Yeah.
Let's latch on to him. And I also like Richard Jenkins is great too. He is really good.
Richard Jenkins is great. Alan Alda is great.
Oh yeah.
And Lily Tomlin's great.
Lily Tomlin. Yeah. As she's being a god. Yeah. She's a great god. She's a great god.
Yes. Both couples, the older couples, are so funny. Lily Tomlin.
Yes, they are.
They're so great. Tomlin and Alda and Mary Tyler Moore and George Siegel.
I like Alan Alda freaking out at the end. I'm not going back to jail. And he's jumping up and down the kitchen.
We're going to Mexico.
We're going to go down to where were they going? That's something de Allende. What's that? Oh, San Miguel.
And his son's like, I don't speak Spanish.
Who was the son? I don't know who that guy. Who's that?
Somebody?
What's the actor? The actor is Glenn Fitzgerald, but I don't know who he is.
Sure.
I think I've seen him.
I'll make my quail.
Lonnie, what is it? Shit King? What was it? Oh, Schlichting.
Schlichting.
Schlichting. Oh, you know who was one? Remember when they went to San Diego? The twins?
Yeah.
The two daughters? You know, one of them is Howard Stern's wife.
Yeah. That's right. Beth Stern. Yeah.
Beth Ostrowski.
That's right. Yeah. That was pretty funny. Well, the other one was someone too. It was the other twin.
I don't know what her name is. Cynthia LaMontagne. I don't know who she is though.
Oh,
she did other stuff, but I don't know if I've ever seen her before.
That was pretty funny when it was Beth. That was pretty funny. So So you guys dived into a second batch of this? Second?
I want to do a third. So
I'm really surprised. It's really easy drinking once your palate gets used to the heat, which reminds me. Although this is funny. So with hot alcohol, high proof alcohol, the alcohol dissipates for me over time. Peppers don't. Peppers linger, and that's what I'm getting here. This is the lingering pepper flavor that I'm getting, but it's not enough to make me not like it. It's a good soft burn.
That's a good thought too, right? Because with alcohol, as you said, you know, that does dissipate over that time. And I feel like sort of the heat builds a little bit more as we keep going, getting a little bit extra, at least I am as I'm sipping on this here. But I'm glad you guys are liking it.
It's a lot of fun. Would you sip it neat normally, or would you go on the rocks, or?
Aaron, like you said, it's been 110 degrees everywhere, so I've been putting a rock on it just because it's been so hot outside. But, you know, today it's probably about 65 degrees up here in Minneapolis, so I'm just sipping it neat and it's tasty. At 80 proof, you don't need to add,
you know,
that rock to bring it down. It certainly can help with temperature, but I think flavor-wise, it's great just as it is.
And you said this is going to be a regular part of the line. It's part of the core range.
Yes, this is one of our everyday items. I think a year from now, if we talk, this will be our number one product in our portfolio. I truly think that, you know, the reaction the three of you had, the enjoyment you're getting out of it, and how different it is from what is on the shelf, right? Because it's not, as you guys called out, those entry-level flavored whiskeys that don't satisfy a whiskey drinker's palate, right? There is nothing wrong. Go ahead.
Well, like we've had a few from an unnamed Canadian brand. They made an apple one, and it was like a Jolly Rancher.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess is fine if I want like a glass of schnapps, but don't call it apple flavored whiskey or whatever it is. You know, it's just, there's no whiskey in this.
But let me tell you, I'd give my right arm to sell as much as they do.
Oh, well, yeah. Right? I mean, that's the thing,
yeah,
right?
So,
see that if this was going up against a cinnamon-flavored whiskey, that seems to be with the young folks, I would imagine that this would certainly play
like
with them as well.
Jerry Lee Lewis, Great Balls of Fire, is that what it's called? Something like that, right?
It's giving you, that kick. It's nice. I could see this.
Yeah, and so that's what it is, right? There's what I think we have here is something that bridges the gap between both of those and is enjoyable for people who want a whiskey, but also want a flavor. So it's a great bridge. I'm really, really amped about what this does for us.
What is this going to sell for, you think, retail?
You're going to get between, depending on the market, between 45 and 55 on the shelf.
And what's your lowest end, the lower on the end of the regular rise? They start about 55, right?
So our entry level 80 proof without the honey in it is going to be between 40 and 45. That's where you're going to see that one. And so, you know, this is just like a, you know, one price point above that.
Step up.
Yeah. You know, honey isn't free. So
No. Well,
and it'll be a 750 also.
Always, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I like the Virginia connection to it all, that you've got this honey that's locally sourced. You've already got locally sourced rye, right? Itself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and one thing, I can't believe I forgot about this, guys. We are actually also donating $1 for every bottle sold to bee conservation.
I saw that on the website.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, that it's my campaign. I can't believe I forgot to bring it up.
The bees are important. We got to support the bees.
You know, it really is important. It's so important, actually, that we put a beehive on my father-in-law's property. He's got 80 acres out in Southwest Michigan. And so my wife and I got him a hive for Father's Day. And
nice.
You know, he may put up another 4 or 5 over the next year or so. So I'll also send you guys a really funny picture. I took some promo photos with this, right? And so, you know, I took it out. He actually has some rye on his property, but it all already collapsed for the year after, you know, before I got there. But I went to take some promo photos, and they've got a suit, but my wife neglected to tell me that it doesn't have pants. So I'm wearing a top half of a V suit and then shorts. And so,
not very helpful, you know,
I'm not a fan of bees. I'm fairly terrified of bees. So yeah, it was. But I'll send you guys that along with the video so you can get a nice out of, you know, my misfortune.
I would lose my mind. I would need a pair of like noise canceling headphones because the buzzing would drive me crazy.
That would be bad. Yes.
It is intense.
Yes. So when this rolls out, do you guys have a big promotional campaign ready for this thing or is it already happening?
Yeah, so we started the preview via social media. We got a little sneak peek there. In the Mid-Atlantic, we're going to have a really, really strong kickoff, sort of starting September 15th is our first really big event in the D.C. market. And then September is also Virginia Spirits Month. So we've got a lot of promotion going on around that. And then, into October across the country, we're going to be, throwing parties all over the place. My team's trying to convince me to buy a bee costume to show up to some of these things. I don't know that I'll do it or not, but we'll see.
All right, back to the movie. Any thoughts more on the cast of Flirting with Disaster?
It was fun to see like a younger Josh Brolin compared to like the roles he's taken now, whether it was like No Country for Old Men, where he's kind of, what is he, like an ex? He's like you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he like an ex-war veteran, like a Vietnam War veteran or something like that? And even in, what was that other movie? He was in Sicario, where he's either, I don't know if he's FBI or CIA or whatever he's in. So, he's a little more grizzled, whereas in this, he's just kind of goofy and real quirky.
Or, Thanos or Cable.
Yeah, right.
In movies that made money.
You got to start somewhere, right? I mean, he was great. I thought he was really good. Yeah. He was just really strange. So just all the stuff. When he's asking about circumcision with the kid, giving her like breastfeeding advice. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's insane. And just, I love how he made like Richard Jenkins so uncomfortable.
Yes, constantly.
It's a private conversation. What are you doing?
Jenkins is one of the most unheralded great actors of our time.
Oh, he's fantastic. We watched Step Brothers a couple weeks ago. He is fantastic in Step Brothers.
Every time it's on, we watch it. The kids love it.
It's so good. I'm watching it with my son, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
He was so great in 6 Feet Under.
Yeah, he was.
Just amazing. Yeah. He is just so – he's one of those guys that – oddly enough, we do know his name, but he's one of those guys you would normally not know his name, right? He's just that nameless great actor. Uh-oh. I see Joanne McGinnis. What'd she say here? My boys, serious whiskey question. I have to ask a bunch of Americans, do you think it's time to put the term proof to bed? That's an interesting question.
I think she's just making controversy for the sake of making controversy.
Those Canadians will do that for you.
Yeah, right? I think so.
Yes. Well, I don't really like the term proof.
Yeah, it's kind of silly, right?
No, I like ABV.
Yeah, ABV makes a little more sense.
It does. I don't want to have to go through math. I just want to know what percentage of this thing is alcohol.
So the answer to the question, at least from the Booze Dancing crew, is yes, get rid of it.
Get rid of it.
Dean,
yes.
From a sales perspective?
Yeah, because anytime I have to do these conversations or item setups or anything, absolutely, get rid of it. I always have to answer both ABV and proof. And I don't understand why, because they're the same thing. It just, it's dumb. Get rid of it.
Right.
Get rid of it.
That's right.
There we go.
Before I knew what this all meant, I used to think that proof was used a lot from the marketing standpoint because the number's bigger and we like big numbers. Mm-hmm. 115, that sounds like it's impressive. Wow. That's great. 120. Oh.
151 rum. Hello.
151 rum. That's the only place you see it marketed on really on a barrel. Bottle.
151 sounds better than 75.5%, right?
I guess, but yes.
In America, proof's different in England, right?
True. It's correct. And only Joshua Hatton knows how to explain that very well, I think.
I don't know. Yes. Proof is upsetting the Canadians. I'd just keep proof in place and those Canadians.
Just one Canadian.
Too bad.
Let's get rid of it. And while we're getting rid of proof, we'll get rid of Celsius too. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say that.
The whole metric system, gone.
Because 110 degrees in the shade sounds better than 36.5 or whatever.
Whatever, yes.
It doesn't seem hot enough.
No, it just doesn't. It's like, I hear like I'll talk to the family in Italy. Oh, it's 37 today. I'm like, well, that's not so bad. And I'm like, oh, that's hot.
Double man. It at 30.
Divide by two, multiply by pi. Yeah, I get it.
Got your slide rule.
It's the hypotenuse of temperature. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, back to the movie. Yeah, Richard Jenkins I thought was great. He steals great. A lot of shows. He's really, really good.
George Hill. Did George Hill pass away? I think
he did recently, yeah. Did,
yes. Right.
Him and Alan Alda, just great, great, great. I almost think they're almost like character actors, right? They're just so good whenever they're doing whatever. And they're great in interviews, too. Alan Alda's still great in interviews. Mm-hmm. He does podcasts, and he's amazing in podcasts. And he's like close to 90, maybe? He definitely in his 80s.
Well, Alan Alda.
Yeah. Yeah.
The late 80s, is my guess.
Yeah. Just incredible. And Mary Tyler Moore, I just loved seeing her pretty much anything. And she's so chaotic in this and so funny. Just
inappropriate. Got...
inappropriate. That was the best. Inappropriate. The whole thing with the bra was just so inappropriate. The whole thing with that just cracks. And that's like a moment that like sticks out because I'm like, it's Mary Tyler Moore. She's like lifted her. It was just so goddamn funny.
It's Mary Tyler Moore. And watching that doc, you see her go through these different eras of her career. And when she gets to the film part of stuff, she's a different person completely because she's gone through so much. And TV's kind of passed her by. She can't get a TV a role anymore. And so, but then she has an amazing, acting career, film career, I should say. I have to say, I was not in love with this movie.
I could tell. I know. Don't hold back. Speak your mind.
So my problem was with it. I wanted it. Well, because I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I kept thinking, first off, I thought this would be a really great movie for Albert Brooks. I wish he wrote it. I wish he was the Ben Stiller character. It wasn't black enough for me as a black comedy. And it wasn't funny enough for me as a comedy. Yeah. It wasn't hilarious. I wasn't dying in laughter. And it wasn't just dark enough to be a dark comedy. So I was torn. I was in the middle on this thing because
watched it once, right?
Watched it once. Yeah.
So maybe it's different. If you watch it again, it might be different,
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's an expectation because you didn't know what to expect.
Did not know what to expect. Not at all. And I didn't even really think about the time frame of when it was because Ben Stiller's a star. I didn't know, is this Ben Stiller's first movie? Is it his 10th movie?
He probably had the Ben Stiller show at this point. That's already
done.
Because every time I looked at him, I just kept picturing Eddie Munster because he looked so different when he was younger.
Yeah.
Because I think he did Eddie Munster on the Ben Stiller show, didn't he?
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think he did like a Eddie Munster skit.
Yeah. I thought that this was basically a pre-Adam Sandler movie. I could have easily seen Adam Sandler playing the neurotic guy who winds up doing all these stupid things, and his wife is like, "What did you do now?" Oh my God,
but why isn't it just a Ben Stiller movie? Because he does the same thing pretty much all the time.
No, but strike me that like I never realized how similar the two of them were.
Yeah,
and you're like, wait, this could have been an Adam Sandler movie.
It could have been
when he takes out the woman he thinks is his mother, all of her glass figurines,
all
that stuff. Yeah. That's like a typical Sandler kind of thing to see happen. You're like, oh, God, this is terrible.
It's funny you just mentioned Sandler because I just watched this movie on Netflix called You Are...
Oh, the Not Invited to Bar Mitzvah, that one?
Yes, You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. Yeah. That's what it's called. It's his production company. He is the dad in this thing. He's not a star. He's the dad. And it's so funny to think of him now as the dad in a movie, and he's totally the schleppy old Jewish dad guy in this movie who he probably is at home to some extent with his 13-year-old daughter. Cause I think it's his daughter in the movie. I think.
Yeah. Both his daughters and his wife. Yeah.
Okay. His wife's in it.
Yeah.
No, but she's not the,
I don't know if she plays. I just heard that the whole family was in the movie.
I think it's Idina Menzel is his wife in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, Idina Menzel. Yeah.
Yeah. but this is his, that's his arc. He was Happy Gilmore a few years ago, yeah, right. And now he's a dad who's kind of.
Well, learned. By the way, a few years ago was 30, like almost 30 years ago, or 20.
I know. When I say few, I mean 30. Yes.
Yeah, because it came around because Happy Gilmore's around that time.
Same year,
95, 94, yes, 95.
That's right. And that was that's right. This movie was a Happy Gilmore production. I think I saw.
That's the movie on Netflix.
Yeah, it's that's his
Happy production. Madison Productions. I think.
Happy Madison. I'm sorry, Happy Madison. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It's so, and Ben Stiller's probably, he's probably done some old guy stuff too now, right? He's 30 years past.
Wow. He's just directing now at this point, right? He's just doing a lot of directing.
So back to this, back to Flirting with Disaster though. For me, when I see a comedy, you know, read the sort of thing and Ben Stiller, I think it's going to be more screwball, right? And so I think it's just going to be just a comedy. And, you know, Mike, as you said, it's not that, right? And so that's part of, I think what stressed me out about it is I kept expecting the comedy to get heightened every time, and instead it didn't, right? As soon as you sort of got to that point where the comedy should have gone off the rails, disaster strikes, right? Yes. And that's it was, again, perhaps on a second. Now I have to buy it because if I pay another dollar for it, I'm just going to, you know.
But, yeah, for buck.
Yeah.
Do they do that? Did they just say one more dollar you can own it, or you have to go back and buy it again?
They should. I mean, come on, Jeff. Let's go. Let's do it. No. But you know, perhaps on a second full watching, I'll feel a little less just for, as you said, David Russell is frenetic, right? We were discussing before we hopped on. You know, Three Kings is another movie like that, right? It's this next movie after this, and. You know, that gives you the same sort of feeling. Like it is just, you know, stress inducing. And I think Ben Stiller, I think Dodgeball, right? That's where my mind goes first. Yeah. Or Zoolander. Not this. Yeah. You know, so for me, that was the experience for me.
What was Three Kings? Is that the one in
Clooney?
It's Kuwait.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Kuwaiti gold. Right?
Yeah.
Kuwaiti one.
Yeah, it's Mark Wahlberg and
Wahlberg
and Clooney. George Clooney.
Yeah. Yes.
And what's his name's in it too? I can't think of his name now. He's a director too. Spike Jones. I think Spike Jones is in it too.
Ice Cube. Spike Jones.
There's a lot of
Nora Dunn.
That was good from what I remember. I haven't seen it in a long time. Yeah. I remember really liking that movie.
What's he, our age? He's like, or my age? He's David Russell is 65. He's only made 13 movies. This is 94. Mm-hmm. Spanking the Monkey was the first one. Right. Then Flirting with Disaster. Then Three Kings. The Slaughter Rule. Anchorman. I Heart Huckabees. The Fighter. Silver Linings Playbook is 18 years after this movie, after Flirting with Disaster. American Hustle. Right. Accidental Love. Quit Project removed his name. He actually didn't produce that, direct that. Yeah. Joy and Amsterdam.
Oh, he did Amsterdam? Okay, I didn't see that one, but it's on Max right now. I don't think it's supposed to be very good.
I did not realize his list of movies was so short.
Did you? I didn't see it. Okay.
I also did not realize he came to blows with George Clooney.
Did he?
What?
Which is amazing.
Wow. Also, that's it's more interesting.
Well, it says here that, I mean, one of the trivia was, according to Lily Tomlin, Ben Stiller and David O. Russell did not get along and had many heated arguments.
Yeah,
I think he's kind of a difficult guy, but
Think so.
And in I Heart Huckabees, he almost came to blows with Lily Tomlin.
Did he?
What?
Yeah,
really.
Wouldn't want to take her on.
Interesting.
He gets to the point where the actors have to pull him aside and say, "You need to stop.
Chill, dude.
You need to stop."
On Wikipedia, it says Burt Reynolds was up for a role in the film, but Russell decided not to work with him after hearing he was abusive on the set of Larry Sanders.
That's funny.
That's funny. Pretty funny.
Only one person is allowed to be abusive on the set. That's me.
That's right. That's my job, buddy. Mr. Reynolds, get the hell out of here and go work with Sally Field.
Wow. I just thought some of the you know, the set points to things too, where like he sees the twins that are supposed to be his sisters, and the physical resemblance is so different that you're like, they can't possibly be related. And like the Richard Jenkins part at the very end, where he's getting them out of jail and he's got his suit coat on and no pants. And Mary Tyler Moore is the only person to say, why is that man not wearing pants? Everyone else is just, sure, we'll let him out of jail. You're showing me a badge. This is great.
whatever.
Why is he not wearing
pants? That's your Wednesday home Zoom meeting, right? Is that the ensemble? Underwear and a jacket?
That's how I do the news on Channel 4 every afternoon.
You probably have to watch it two or three times to see like little stuff like that where you're like, wait a second, that guy's not wearing pants.
I think I will rewatch it just for those moments.
The scene on the airplane when they're all changing seats. Oh. Could you not sit here? Could you not? It's okay if you sit here.
It was also funny watching it, how you know you could just kind of sit wherever you want on an airplane. Kind of time.
And did the plane look huge?
Yeah.
It looked huge. Naturally. And it also looked very tight. They looked pretty small seats too, which is what we have now. Things haven't gotten any better.
And the whole thing with the bed and breakfasts about how they're terrible.
Oh,
bed
that was great.
Terrible.
Those are true. They kind of are. Yes.
You get some crazy old person in their house, and then the woman's like, no calls after 8 p.m.
That's probably right out of Ben Stiller's stand-up, right?
Or something that happened to David O. Russell at some point. You know, we're like, no calls.
Have you stayed in many bed and breakfasts?
No. Every time we do, it's a disaster.
I stayed in one or two. The best one, there were a couple that were good ones, not to go off track, but there was one that was actually on the battlefield in Gettysburg. That was really cool. That was pretty neat. And then I was in Annapolis once, and we were at one, and the guy who owned it, he was a former naval pilot, and his wife was an engineer, and she was, I think he said she was in Hawaii doing like some kind of sonar, some kind of radar testing on submarines or something, some kind of crazy stuff. So that was kind of neat. The owners were cool. So, but anyway,
we stay in some good ones here.
It just depends.
But it's odd sometimes, with a shared bathroom or
even better, the community breakfast, like really
the community breakfast thing. Yeah. It's you know, the key is like this ancient key that's like, you know, 6 feet long and
Can't lose
okay.
it.
Okay. Can't lose it.
Can't lose it.
It's like I'm going to the bathroom at a gas station.
Yeah, can't forget it's in your pocket. Can't lose it.
Oh, that's too funny.
Oh my gosh. Well, we've come to the top of the hour here, boys. This was really fun. Dean, we can't thank you enough for coming back onto the show. Dean Kaplan from Catoctin Creek Distillery in Virginia with the brand new, soon to be released or being released now, the Hot Honey Rye.
It's delicious.
There's the actual bottle. I love the label.
That's cool.
I looked at the website has it.
Yeah, so it's actually designed by a woman who used to work at the distillery, and she's an artist, so she drew it for us.
That's
so
cool.
You know, trying to keep it local as well.
And it's coming out 1st of October.
Yeah, well, it'll be distributed in the 28 states that you know, we distribute through, but you can also, if you go to buyvirginiarye.com, we have an e-commerce partner that'll ship it right to your house in, I think, 47 states. So perfect. Just that easy.
That's awesome.
Excellent.
Cheers again. This was so good and so fun. And interesting movie that we all had different thoughts on, Flirting with Disaster also. I think we definitely like the whiskey more in general. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I like the movie equally, but you know. So screw you, Aaron. Screw you. Mr. Picky.
What we watch when we drink. This is going to be out on a podcast for download and listening in a few weeks. And we'll have it out on social media for you too, Dean. Thank you again for coming back.
Yeah, thanks so much.
To Booze Dancing.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Hold on. Don't go anywhere. We'll run the credits. We'll talk to you afterwards.
All righty. Cheers, folks.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.